In my vision earlier, the sky was spinning. So I think I was here, right here on this merry-go-round during Miss Harris's recess.
I don't understand. I thought you were seeing through the eyes of the Demogorgon.
No, I know, so did I. But you said yourself Vecna controls the hive mind, right? Which means he's a part of it too. So when he searches for his victims...
He invades their minds.
He sees what they see.
Did Holly ever describe Mr. What's it to you? Like, maybe what he's wearing or anything like that?
Holly, time for breakfast.
Pocket watch.
Tall? Vest. Okay, he wears a vest. He is gentle and kind.
So, what if I was seeing through the eyes of Vecna's next victim, this victim he's stalking, which means I was seeing through...
Holly's eyes. But if that's true, it would mean...
I was him. I was Vecna.
Stranger friends, and welcome back to Stranger Danger. This is me doing a robot voice. I wasn't expecting it, and now I'm stuck. Help me. I can't wait. I gotta just completely stop talking. Take a deep breath, and now I'm back to podcasting voice. Welcome back, Stranger friends. Thank you to everybody who downloaded, streamed, listened to the first episode of Stranger Danger 5 that I put out last week, a week ago today, covering episode 1 of Stranger Things 5, chapter 1, I should say, of Stranger Things 5, The Crawl. And now, after a week, just as I promised, I am back talking about chapter 2. And just like last week, I planned on working on it all week and getting it done sooner. And here I am Sunday night talking about it again. I waited until the very end to talk about it. Now, I did prep. I prepped, you know, all weekend, getting all my notes put together and my sound clips. And then I said, you know what? And then I'm going to record earlier. And that didn't happen. But that's okay, because it's Monday for you guys, at least. It's at least Monday for you guys, for you early listeners. Happy Monday. For everyone else, happy future. How is it? Are all the cars flying yet? Oh, I can't wait to get there. Now, in the past week, I want to thank some people who reached out. Robbie over on Instagram, Robbie Petty, reached out to me. He had some thoughts and some theories, but they're kind of for future episodes, so I'm going to hold on to those, but I did get your message. Thank you very much for messaging me there. And also, over on Spotify, I got a few comments on some episodes. Now, some of them were from the end of the rewatch. I just want to give a quick shout out because maybe I did already and I completely forget. But Iriz and Mags, thank you. Mags said, y'all, season 5's out. Yes, it is. And Iriz, again, apologize. Can't wait for you to speak about the first chapter. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I got a message from Pieta saying OMG, which stands for, wait a minute, O stands for O, M, my, and G, golly. Oh my golly, so excited to listen. I have been waiting for this. Thank you very much, Pieta. And, Shannon replied, me too. And then Shannon wrote to me just today, saying, I love your podcast and I love the way you tell us your opinions as well as describing it beautifully. Thank you so much, Shannon. And I got two other messages when the show first came out from Sakura. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Last time I listened to your podcast, I really was in high school. Now I'm currently finishing the first half of my fourth year of college. So excited to be coming back. That is awesome. Thank you. It's the stranger friends. They grow up so fast. And Fizza wrote back saying, Mike, you haven't forgotten how to do this at all. Sounds like it should. Perfect. Thank you very much. And I hope to keep my perfect streak alive as we get ready to talk about the next episode. And lastly, Jack, I got your voicemail. I hope to be playing your voicemail and some other voicemails soon, but thank you so much. Longtime listener sent a voicemail recently. Yes, you can send a voicemail too. Go to strangerdangerpodcast.com/hotline and you can leave a voicemail as well. Or if you're on Spotify, you can just leave a comment in any of the episodes. And if you're on Apple, just go to the reviews and just write, you know, something really nice. I think 5 stars, if I'm pretty sure it's the lowest you can go, I think. I don't know for sure, but that would, you know, it helps. It helps to make the world of the Stranger Friends even bigger and brighter and better and cooler. As cool. It's going to keep the cool, consistent level the same and just bring in more cool friends. Not more cool, more cool friends. Same level of cool, but more of them. I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, so I'm not gonna. I am just rambling at this point. I have so much to do, so let's not waste any more time. Let's get to it right now. Here we go. I'm going into that voice. Here it comes. As we go and discuss Stranger Things 5, Chapter 2, The Vanishing of Holly Wheeler. So chapter 2 opens with, to me, one of the more dark and depressing pre-credit scenes that I can think of from any of the episodes. Not right away, though. Right away, we pick up exactly where the last episode left off. We have old Flower Face, that son of a bee. He tore a hole right through Holly's ceiling, and he's making his way into her room. And by the way, I don't think I mentioned this last time or brought this up, but Demogorgons can now just rip gates open wherever? Like, I don't remember this being addressed, but maybe with Vecna's, like, somewhat his victory, I guess you could say, at the end of chapter Stranger Things 4, like, is it easier than ever for them to go back and forth between our world, our dimension, and the Upside Down? But anyway, this son of a bitch jumps right into Holly's room and she tries to get away. He picks her up. He flings her across the bedroom into a bookcase where she's easily injured. And in a way, it's probably a good thing that he did do that. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But there is quite a ruckus going on in her room. And yet, Mom doesn't seem to notice at all. It doesn't seem like Karen hears anything going on because of wine. Well, wine and ABBA. There was something in the air that night. The stars were bright, Fernando. They were shining there for you and me, for liberty, Fernando. She's cranking ABBA, which, why wouldn't you crank ABBA? You know, my wife and my mother-in-law, we went to see Mamma Mia. After that, I wanted to crank ABBA. So, but they didn't have Mamma Mia back in the 80s. They just had the original ABBA. So she's cranking that while she's getting ready to take a bath. And I'm thinking, you know, drinking and taking a bath, probably not the safest thing. But the music is so loud that Ted can hear it outside. I think it's like disturbing his golf game. And I mean, sure, yeah, he can hear that. But it seems like nobody hears the interdimensional being attempting to kidnap their youngest child. Thankfully, Holly is quite resourceful. And actually, thankfully, Holly's shoe isn't on too tight because the Demogorgon's pulling at it and it comes right off while he's attempting to literally drag her back in through the ceiling gate. She falls to the ground, screams, and quickly runs down the hall right into her mom's room, right into the bathroom. Thankfully, Mom isn't in the bath yet.
Oh, baby, what are you doing? What's wrong?
There's a
Holly, slow down. I can't understand you.
There's a monster. The monster.
Holly. Whatever you saw, baby, it's just a nightmare.
No,
baby,
Mom,
it's
Mom.
Just a nightmare.
Don't. Please trust me, Mom.
Please, Mom, please. You gotta believe me.
It's at this point that, you know, Karen is hugging Holly, and all of a sudden her hand has blood on it. Uh-oh. Remember I said it's a good thing that Holly got flung into her bookcase? Because without that happening, I don't think Karen would have realized that what was happening is actually real. And also, I just want to give a shout out to Cara Buono, because the way she talked to her daughter, I think she's like, please, like she talked really slow. That was a really good job of sounding drunk instead of just like being all over the place and being like, you know, like a, I don't know, like the stereotypical drunk sound that you think. Just the way she slowly talked was really like spot on to some drunk people that I've heard in the past. So just as she, you know, realizes there's something wrong, there actually is something wrong, that's when you hear the bam. And all of a sudden, Karen's like, what the hell is that? And they can hear the monster getting closer. The music slows down, the lights flicker, and Karen just grabs her daughter and holds her closer. And you could tell, I mean, for me, she's probably sobered up really quickly at that point, but I mean, wouldn't you too? Finally outside, finally, Golfing Ted hears the noise in the house, and he's like, what the heck is that? As he sees the lights going crazy in the house too. Back inside the house, the monster smacks into the bathroom door and starts to walk in. He starts to just kind of go in. And we cut at that point to Mike and Lucas pedaling their asses off while Nancy and Eleven are in the car. All of them are desperately trying to get back to the Wheeler house, but the girls in the car are obviously much closer and they will get there first. But by then, will it be too late? The monster made it into the bathroom, made it through the door, came in to find no one. Just a tub filled with bubbles. And I have to admit, that looked really enticing. I would love to get in a tub filled with bubbles. But I don't think the Demogorgon, you know, can appreciate a good bubble bath. Instead, it just looks around. It doesn't really quite know what's going on or where the person they're looking for is. And it smashes the shower door. Nothing's in there. But now they have to replace a perfectly good shower door. It looks at the tub. And then we go down below the water and we see Karen and Holly are under the bubbles. That shot, very familiar, right from the trailer. Like that, oh, that's from the trailer. And I remember seeing it in the trailer. And for some reason, I thought they were like in a container. Like I never even dawned on me that they were hiding in the tub. I don't know why. It makes perfect sense when you're seeing it. And they're holding their breath for pretty much as long as you can. All right. And maybe I'm thinking like maybe the Demogorgon can't smell them. Or maybe his first instinct isn't to look at the water, but he seems to be catching on as he gets closer and closer to the tub. So close, in fact, that he's hovering right over the water. Just as Daddy Ted arrives, he's not I want to say he's not quite heroically doing anything right away because he's just like, Karen, he just calls her name. But it does do the trick as it distracts the Demogorgon and puts the attention back over on Pappy Wheeler. But he knows something is up as he's making his way slowly approaching the room, brandishing his five iron as some sort of makeshift weapon. He sees lights flickering. He sees the bedroom torn up. And his first thought is to say, heavens to Betsy? After a little while saying, what the heck? I'm going to say, I don't think Mike learned his swearing from dear old dad. Now he gets closer to the room, which actually draws the Demogorgon out of the bathroom just in time, just as Karen and Holly can no longer hold their breath, and boom, they pop up out of the water. Ted comes into the room, and the first thing he says is, holy smokes. Again, language, Ted. Now, all of a sudden, the Demogorgon appears, and I thought it would have been funny if the first F-bomb on Stranger Things ever was dropped right there, but it wasn't. He just yells at the beast to stay back, and he swings his club at it. Now, I can say this is being heroic, okay? Heroic, but fruitless, as the Demogorgon swipes at Ted, sending him flying down the hall into another room over a bed and onto the ground, onto the floor, and it looks like his chest is a bloody mess. And right away, I can't help but think the worst, because remember, this is the final season. Anything can happen. All bets are off. So as Ted goes flying, the Demogorgon doesn't notice behind him Karen and Holly running down the stairs. They get down to the first floor and another gate opens right at the front door. And my first thought, I remember thinking, is this another Demogorgon? Like they've sent two of them, but I think it just was quicker for him to go through the ceiling and then down through the front door. And again, that gate opened really, really quick right in the front door. Talk about an uninvited guest. I'm going to pause for applause and for laughing. Okay, back to the show. So Holly and Mom run. They run through the kitchen, but Karen slips. She slams up against the kitchen island like really hard. And Holly, again, really like these kids are brave. And I mean, another kid could run and leave their mom behind. I'd like to think I wouldn't either, but I have to give it to Holly. She does not just keep running. She turns around and she tries to help Mom stand up. And then the Demogorgon appears right around the corner and Karen pushes Holly back. And in a moment of sheer mom badassery, in a moment where you see a woman just take control, in a moment where you say, oh, this is where Nancy Wheeler gets it. Karen takes the wine bottle, smashes it, and holds the jagged edge up to the creature.
Stay away from my daughter!
Oh, no!
The Demogorgon roars, and Karen goes right in and gives the monster some bottle service as she stabs and stabs and stabs and stabs the creature repeatedly. We cut outside. Nancy and Eleven finally get to the house. They already know the Demogorgon is inside. They pull up as quickly as possible and they race inside. And Nancy has the rifle raised. And when they walk in and all we see is their reaction, all we see is Nancy and Eleven, my niece and I were both like, oh no. Now, Mike and Lucas, they're still riding their bikes. They're still not there. They're yelling for Nancy to say, what's up? Nancy, Nancy. But there is no response because inside the house, she's speechless. We pan down. We come back to them. We see, you know, what's going on. And the first thing that we see that they see is blood. And we were both like, no, 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 no. Then we go back and forth between a flashback of Karen with the wine bottle, cut to Karen's body laying on the floor. The kitchen phone is laying there next to her, and all we hear is a dial tone. It's like she tried. She tried to get to the phone. She tried to call 911. Maybe she did. We don't know. We do see her move, though. We do see that she is still breathing. We cut back one more time, and we see that the Demogorgon stabbed Karen right in the side of her abdomen with its grubby claws. And then it slashed right across her neck and her chest as Holly screams, but we don't hear it. We don't hear Holly screaming. All we hear is that damn dial tone. She lay there. Her eyes are open, but you can see she's in shock. Her breathing is quick and it's shallow. And that's how Nancy and Eleven find her.
Don't try to talk, okay? Just stay calm, okay? You're gonna be fine. It's gonna be fine, okay? You're gonna be fine.
So they both take off their coats and they use them to try to slow down some of the bleeding. But Karen does find the strength to say one word. Holly. We then cut back again to see that after striking down Mama Wheeler, Old Flower Face came right at Holly. Like you could see like the reflection of the Demogorgon in the young girl's eyes. They both then notice that there's a gate at the door. And I think you can actually hear Holly screaming. And Nancy, without hesitation, tells Eleven, go, go, go. And first Eleven seems like, go, go? Oh, okay, yes. And she walks right up and right through the gate, like doesn't run through, just kind of walks right through the gate. As Nancy continues to tell her mom, just hold on, stay with me, you're gonna be okay, just hold on.
You're gonna be okay, Mom. I'm right here. Just stay with me. Okay, can you just do that? Can you please just stay with me? I promise that when anything happens to you, I'm gonna get you some help. I need you to hold on, okay? Just hold on.
As Nancy's pleading with her mother to hold on, we see the gate closing, but we see it from the Upside Down's point of view. The gate closes completely, so we don't see Nancy or Karen anymore. The screen goes black, and we get to the opening credits. For years, Mr. and Mrs. Wheeler were in the dark about everything, everything that was going on. But now they know. Monsters are real, and they're in Hawkins. Karen Wheeler is holding on for dear life. Ted, we have no idea what's going on with him, but again, I'm only fearing the worst. And Holly, she's gone. Taken to the Upside Down. But thankfully, before the gate closed, 11 went to rescue her. We immediately after the credits cut to the Hawkins Hospital, and Mr. and Mrs. Wheeler are alive. They're both still alive, but you know they don't look that good, and both of them seem to be rushed into emergency surgery. Nancy, Mike, and Lucas, they accompanied them as far as they could, but at a certain point, the doctors took them both into the OR, and the doors closed, leaving Lucas and the Wheeler siblings just standing there feeling helpless. We cut to Nancy in the bathroom. Remember, she's like covered in blood and she is in tears as she tries to wash her mother's blood off of her hands. She really starts to break down as she just never seems to have enough soap. I don't think there's enough soap in the world that would make her feel clean this night. The tension builds as she keeps hitting the soap dispenser, and then it cuts to an eerily quiet waiting room where she's now back with Lucas and her brother, and they're just sitting there. You can see the way Mike is like sitting, like his hands are on his knees. They just all look like uncomfortable and scared and just kind of helpless. And I think Nancy like could no longer like stay quiet about what she was thinking.
This is our fault. This is all our fault.
We got there as fast as we could.
I'm not talking about tonight. We could have acted yesterday, last week, last fall. We could have tried to get them out of Hawkins or at least told them the truth. We could have done something. Anything.
We couldn't have known, Nancy. We couldn't have known any of this would happen.
Do you really believe that, Mike?
After all this time, it comes for Holly? Holly, who has nothing to do with any of this. I mean, it makes no goddamn sense.
It makes perfect goddamn sense. Vecna told me this would happen. He showed me. And not just the four gates. Holly, Mom, Dad, dead. And we just chose not to believe him. But now it's all coming true. Like, don't you... get it, Mike. Vecna's come back to realize his vision, to punish us. He did it with Fred and Chrissy and Max, and now it's our turn. And he's not going to stop. You know, he's not going to stop until we're drained of every last ounce of suffering.
You could hear the guilt in Nancy's voice. Because, yeah, they could have like done something to get them out of town, or to tell them the truth, anything. But they didn't do anything. They were too busy doing their plans to fill their own family in on what was really going on. But Mike's like, you know, like we couldn't have known he'd be after Holly. This doesn't make any sense. Nancy thinks she's saying it makes perfect sense about the visions that Vecna, you know, showed her, the family dead, the gates, and it's all coming true. And her thinking is Vecna wants her and them to suffer like they've never suffered and can like until they can suffer no more. But Lucas then follows up and he's like, you know, he's not so sure about that. Like he thinks Vecna took Holly for a reason, for a purpose, not just for suffering and punishment. Because if that was the case, why leave Ted and Karen alive? Why send a Demogorgon? And that Mike's like, wait, like, you don't think Vecna did this? And Lucas is like, you know, I'm not saying that. Like, I don't know, and neither do you. But what I do know is that I'm having some serious deja vu, because this is almost exactly what happened to Will.
You know what date it is, right? November 3rd.
My brother's birthday.
Will was taken on the 6th. We are less than 3 days away. 3 days away from the day that changed everything. I don't know about you guys, but I don't believe in coincidences. Not anymore.
I love that. I love that, you know, Nancy's blaming herself. And again, there's a certain level of, yeah, you could have let your parents know what's going on. But Lucas is kind of looking at the bigger picture of things. Like, he doesn't think that this is just some random thing. The fact that, again, it's almost like to the anniversary date of Will being taken. But he does say, you know, here's the thing. I don't believe in coincidences, but we got Will back, and we're going to get Holly back too. And she's not alone. Elle's there. And if anyone can save your sister, and Mike and Lucas both agree, it's Elle. So we go back to the Wheeler's house now, but it's been pretty much taken over by law enforcement and probably some government officials. Well, definitely some government officials, or at least some military officials. That they're securing the area and searching the crime scene. We see Colonel Crapface. General Jerkface before? But if he's a, I think he's a colonel, or is he a captain? Whatever, it's Crapface. That's the new name. And he's there along with that soldier, that same guy who we saw chasing L in the last episode, or at least he thought he was chasing L. He wasn't. I'm going to call him G.I. Joke. Let's see if that stands. Let's see if, by that I mean, let's see if I remember to call him that later. He tells the colonel, or the captain, I don't remember. He tells the main guy, you know, Sullivan. He tells Sullivan that the daughter found the mother here, and they think that Mrs. Wheeler was trying to escape when she was attacked. He's like, nobody saw the intruder, and by the time Nancy got there, the intruder and Holly were both gone. And, by the way, she said she arrived by herself. Now, old Colonel Mustard, or whatever the hell his name is, Captain Sullivan, Colonel, I don't know. It doesn't matter. He's a jerk and we hate him. But he doesn't seem to buy the story that Nancy's alone, as he stares at that burnt mess in the Wheeler's front door. Now, does he know that it's a gate that was recently closed? I'm going to guess, based on the military being in the Upside Down, that he has a better idea of what's going on. So he orders old Soldier Boy to get any video surveillance in the area. And my first thinking was, did they have lots of video surveillance in the 80s, like in neighborhoods? You know, I doubt it, but I bet like while they were driving there, there had to be something that probably caught them, you know, some store or some bank or something that they passed that may have caught Nancy not actually being alone. And as for that closed gate in the Wheeler's front door, we see the gate he's looking at, and then we travel right through the gate, right into the Upside Down, where we know that actually is where Eleven is. Now, she's calling out Holly's name, but it's weird because at first we see, like, it looks like she's in the void, right? We see the puddles, we see nothing but blackness, but as she hears a scream, she turns, and now we see she's just in the normal Upside Down. So something's going on there. She hears some rustling, and she's like, uh-oh, someone's here. Someone's moving. And so she turns quickly and strikes and knocks this person flying through the air. And it's Hopper, smashes up against a tree. He's banged up, but he is okay. She's like, hop, hop. And like his first instinct is like, what the hell are you doing here? It's not safe. But she's like, she knows why she's there. And she's looking around. She's like, "It's there's a Demogorgon and it's bleeding. She must have heard it." Hop's like, who? Who must have heard it? She said, Karen, with her wine. I love the way that Eleven said, very, very matter of fact, like, Karen with her wine. It's funny how she says these things. It reminds me of when she told Max that she piggybacked from a pizza dough freezer. And Hopper gives this response like, what? Like the same response that Max gave. But then I noticed Elle said, when I search for Holly, I can't find her, but she must be close. And so she did travel into the void. Is that, I think that's what she meant. When I search for her, I can't find her, but she must be close. So she took a moment to try to locate her, or she can do it while she's on the move now. Either way, it was a cool shot, and it seems like her powers are maybe elevating as well. Hopper's so out of the loop. He's like, what, Holly? Like Holly Wheeler? But Eleven just gets right back on tracking the blood, and she just keeps moving. Hop, you just need to keep up. So we jump back to WSQK, where Robin and Joyce are looking at the fuse box and what a mess it was. Remember, it kind of went kablooey when Will connected to the Demogorgon and all that. All hell broke loose at the end of the last episode. And Robin asks, you know, has Will's visions ever been like this before? And, you know, Joyce says no. And you can see Robin's like, oh, great. What a new fun development. But Joyce doesn't seem like she really wants to be talking about this with Robin and asks. So, hey, ask her about backup fuses. And basically is like, can you just go and get them and leave me and Will alone for a moment? So now that they're just the two of them, Joyce asks her son if the visions were like before. Like, remember the quote unquote now memories? He coined them. That was the term he had. He described all the way back in Stranger Things 2. And he says, yes, but now they're more intense. It's like he was there. Like he was the Demogorgon. He was seeing what they're seeing and thinking what it's thinking. And like, he's not sure why it would go after Holly, but he thinks somehow he's tapped back into the hive mind. And Joyce is like, but I thought we severed the connection. And you could see the look in Will's face. He's like, I don't think it was ever, like, he's almost like afraid to tell his mom this, because some of it I feel like he's been keeping to himself. But he's like, you know, I don't think that we ever actually truly severed the connection.
Ever since he took me, it's like I was permanently changed. These feelings of connection, they come and go. But that summer, after the gate opened, I felt him again. And it went away when I was in California. But the day after I got back, the feeling returned. And now he's closer. He's closer than ever before.
Like, my first thought is what's going through Joyce's mind. Like, wait, it was disconnected in California? Like, why did we come back here? Now, of course, they didn't come back together, but, you know, why didn't I get you out of here as soon as possible? You almost feels like it's good that she's not leaving, but I wonder if a part of her wants to get the hell out of Hawkins again. It seems like she's fully invested, helping training Eleven, helping with Hopper, helping with everything. But hearing this, it's got to scare the hell out of her. But she really doesn't have a chance to kind of process that before Robin comes back and kind of interjects, which is a good thing she did, because she kind of she's onto something here. She's like, maybe you're a receiver, like a superhuman magical version of a radio receiver. Like, imagine you have an antenna and off the top of your head, and Vecna uses the mind flare particles like radio waves. So I never thought of the particles as kind of getting out to the hive mind. Like, those particles are actually serving a purpose. And when the antenna is close to the waves, the signal comes through clear. But if you're far away, they're static. And now he's like, wait, oh, so he's like, maybe that's how we do it. Maybe that's how we find Holly. Will just wants to help. Like, if he can, if he's truly seeing through the Demogorgon's eyes, maybe he can do it again. Maybe he can reconnect to the signal. Like, he spied on Vecna before and he can do it again. But Joyce is not into that at all. Like, Will almost died last time. But he's like, yeah, okay, but Holly will die if we don't do something. Like, something more than just trying to get the radio fixed just to talk to Hopper. Because how does this get us any closer to Holly? He just, he will not just leave her there. He can't just leave her there. He's been through this. He can't imagine another kid going through this. Because remember, when he's over there, we saw a few little things, but we saw it at the beginning of the first episode, like the hell and torment that he went through. And he's thinking, that little kid is over there right now going through all of this. But Joyce is like adamant. He's like, we'll get her back, but we're not going to risk your life while doing it. And you can see Will is upset as Robin just kind of looks, and then she's like, okay. And she just walks off after the, some, you know, it's just a quiet, awkward moment. She goes off to fix the fuse and get the radio back online. So while the radio station went kablooey, so did the radio station's van. The van is dead, but luckily Steve convinced a girl to help them jumpstart it. But their conversation is a little weird. Steve goes inside to sit in the van to give it a try, and he thinks the girl recognizes him as the jerk who stood up her sister on multiple occasions, but at least she's helping. Now, inside the van, we find out that Jonathan got an update from Nancy about her parents, and Steve wonders, like, should we stop by the hospital to bring her flowers? Jonathan's like, no, you know what? We should just stick to the plan. And Steve's like, oh, okay, but you know that could take a while, and the hospital is on the way. And finally, Jonathan says something like, you thought tonight maybe would be different, maybe this bullshit macho competition for Nancy's attention. He's like, what are you talking? Steve's like, what are you talking about? He says, ever since we got back from California, you're constantly showing off to her, like, oh, how you're better than me, which is like shitty enough on a regular day. But now her parents are like almost dead. They're fighting for their lives. Her sister's missing. And all you can think about is giving her flowers. He calls him a selfish, chauvinistic meathead, which isn't the best. Like, maybe use another swear. Maybe the, it starts with an A. That's what I would have thought. It's at this point the girl honks the horn like, hey, come on, hurry up. Steve checks the ignition. And when he does, he shares a few thoughts of his own. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, Byers. You know, you're totally right. Like me worrying about my good friend. But he stresses, my friend. Oh, that makes me so selfish. But he's like, maybe you're the problem, okay? Ever since you got back, you've been like this paranoid pothead. And maybe if you stopped focusing on me and started focusing on her, maybe then the two of you could finally be happy. Because right now, the only one who's more miserable in that relationship than you is Nancy. And ooh, Steve gave it to him good. Now, yes, Steve does seem to be doing what Jonathan is accusing him of, but at the same time, Jonathan does seem to be a little, as he said, a paranoid pothead weirdo. And Jonathan has no response, but thankfully the van revs back to life and Steve gets out. He's about to go close the hood, disconnect the jumper cables, and probably thank the girl, maybe you'd think, but he stops and he looks out the door and he's like, you've got to be shitting me. Because he looks, and who does he see approaching but Dustin Henderson. You see Dustin walking his bike. His face is all smashed up and bloody. And he gives this kind of like this little hesitant wave like, hi, yeah, it's me. So finally, Dustin is back in the crew. Finally, again, you know me. I love when my team, my group, our friends, they come together. I hate like, okay, Eleven had to leave, but now then she's alone. At least she's with Hopper. But now it's the two of them. I want them back with our heroes. But at least Dustin is back in the mix. So we go back under to the Upside Down, and Eleven's filled Hopper in on everything that's happened. But Hopper seems to be mostly focused on the fact that Elle exposed herself by driving with Nancy. He's like, we don't drive ever. Okay, we take the tunnels and we don't surface until it's safe. And her only response is like, I wore my hoodie. He's like, oh, great. Okay, cool. You should just be wearing a hoodie everywhere. That's the one thing that'll keep you safe. But Eleven doesn't back down. She says the tunnels are too slow and Holly was in danger. And Hopper's like, okay, great. Now you are too. If those military guys haven't caught you on camera, they will. And at that point, they'll be coming for you with everything they got. And she's like, well, we'll have to end this first, okay? She thinks the Demogorgon can lead them to Vecna. She says, when I searched for Holly, I could not find her, just like Vecna. Maybe wherever she is, he is, where my powers cannot reach. So again, she's talking about using her powers in the void. So she definitely did that. And she's looking for Holly, but she can't find her, just like she hasn't been able to find Vecna at all. So according to her, she thinks that they are someplace where her powers cannot reach.
I'm sorry. So your theory is what exactly? Is that the Demogorgon has taken little Holly Wheeler to Vecna, some kind of early Christmas present? What does Vecna want with Holly Wheeler? How does any of this make sense?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know because you haven't put any thought into anything you've been doing tonight. You've been acting on impulse, on emotion, everything I taught you not to do. Ugh. God damn.
More blood than before. It's slowing down. We can still catch it. And not emotion. Instinct.
I love that line. Okay, Hopper, maybe she doesn't have everything perfectly thought out. Maybe she doesn't have a full plan, but what she lacks in this planning, she makes up for it with her instinct, okay? She's not the prey here. She's the hunter. So we go back to the hospital, but we're not with the Wheelers this time. We're just with Lucas, who's, you know, checking in and visiting with Max again, kind of giving her an update on things. Like, I don't know if she can hear him at this point. He has no idea, but it's almost like it's just trying to make things feel normal. It's not like Max's mom has come to visit her. We haven't seen her once. But he's there. He's filling her up on, you know, giving her updated things, information. And Kate Bush, of course, continues to play in the background. And Lucas, you know, he's like, he thinks the final battle is upon them. And with that, they need the party, the full party, if they have any chance of winning. He pleads with Max to show him a sign, any sign, but nothing. We see nothing. We're just left with just watching the heart monitor continue to beep. Like, I'm watching this like, why are we seeing this? Is it going to speed up something? I don't see anything. And then downstairs in the hospital, Mike, he's getting a couple cups of coffee, which actually seems like a good idea right now. And as he walks down the hall, he stops. He like almost walks by this waiting room, this like playroom. And I mean, good eye, Mike, because he notices out of the blue, he looks back and he's like, ooh, he sees something, catches his eye. And it's the book that Holly's been reading, A Wrinkle in Time. And when he goes back to sit down with Nancy, like you could see it's on his mind, and he says like he couldn't stop thinking about what Lucas said, how there are no coincidences. And he asks Nancy, has Holly ever mentioned Mr. What's-It? And she's like, you mean like the imaginary friend from her book? And obviously she had, because Nancy knew right away. He's like, yeah, in the book, it's Mrs. What's-It. Again, I've never read this book, but it seems like it's almost, at this point, like a tangential book club entry. I feel like I have to read this at some point. And it's a classic, too, so why wouldn't I want to read it? But he's like, yeah, in the book, it's Mrs. What's-It, but this is her own creation. He goes, at least that's what I thought. You know, when I picked her up from school, she said that Mr. What's-It told her there were monsters in Hawkins and warned her that monsters were coming for her. And on that same day, she's actually taken by a monster. He says, as far as coincidences go, that is a hell of a coincidence. And he's like, what if this dude is real? And Nancy's questioning like, you know, but why this and why that? And he's like, I don't know. Like, he definitely knows his theory has holes. And she was definitely right that they could have done more to protect mom, dad, and Holly. But, like, he doesn't want to have any more regrets. And maybe his theory is wrong, but what if it isn't? What if Mr. What's-It is real? And if it is, maybe if he is, maybe he knows things. So they're not even thinking a villain right now. They're thinking maybe he has some answers. Maybe he would know things like why Holly was taken or where she was taken. And Nancy's like, okay, but how would we find out who, you know, what's it, Mr. What's it is? And of course, Mike is like, well, you're the genius investigative reporter. And you can see she's like, okay, like he's definitely stroking the ego. She's like, you know, you like cheat, like a, what do they call that? Cheap pop in wrestling, where you're going for something that's easily going to work. And it did work, because she's like, okay, well, if thinking like a reporter, she's like, we need to talk to the one person who would know about Mr. What's It. We need to talk to Mom. We jump back to the WSQK van, now a driving, functioning van, thanks to the jump start. And Steve is pissed. He's pissed that Dustin wasn't there. He filled him in on everything that's going on, but he's like, out of all the crawls that you missed, this is the one, you know? And Dustin, he's speechless. Like, he doesn't really say anything right away, but he's trying to process everything. He's like, why Holly? And usually he's pretty good at trying to figure this stuff out. So maybe he makes a connection that we don't make, or eventually like his brain starts working correctly again. Cause like, you know, when he brings it up, like, why Holly, Steve's like, oh, who knows? And now we lost our only connection to the Upside Down, and you come here looking like friggin' Rocky Balboa. Now, this is 1986, so at this point, we are well into Rocky IV, I think. Oh, wait, we're at 1987. Rocky IV was 1985, so that's definitely like, yeah, Rocky got the snot beat out of him, but he did, you know, defeat the Russian Drago and end the Cold War. So he accomplished a little more than what Dustin was trying to accomplish, but the outcome, the look on their face, like the actual result of the beating seems to be the same. And Dustin just gets snippy back at like, oh, you should have known how to deal with the power surge. Like, it's simple. Even my mother could do it. And they start going back and forth. And Jonathan in the back, he's like, will you guys shut up? I'm trying to hear a signal. And it gets quiet again. And then Steve talks about, like, it was Andy and his goons, right? He's like, you poked the bear one too many times. And Dustin, like, he says nothing. I guess he's sticking with the bike accident. And he's even, like, flipping. He's like, oh, you know, I'm really, you know, your concern for me is overwhelming. And I'm so annoyed by Dustin here. Like, they yell some more until Jonathan yells again for them to shut the hell up. And what is Dustin's like, oh, you guys seem to be getting along really well. And he says, you know, actually, right now I agree with Byers, because he does not want to talk to Dustin. You could see Henderson feels likewise. They're like, good. I don't want to talk either. I don't either. But I have to tell you, I love that Steve, or when he yelled at him, for once in your life, admit you're wrong, because he is, okay? So far, as far as I can tell, Dustin has not done one thing that has been helpful, right? So he shows up in school. He gets into a tussle. He shows up at lunch. They go to do the planning. They talk about the planning. Then we don't see him. After school, they said, be there at 6 o'clock. That, you know, and he doesn't show up. And he, again, all he does is draw attention to him. All he does is draw attention to Eddie's grave. Yes, again, it's not nice to desecrate a grave like that, but it wouldn't have been a severed snake if it wasn't for what Dustin did in the first place. And again, why wear the jacket? Just keep your head down and get, like, imagine, I don't want to compare high school to prison, but like a lot of the time, Hopper just kept his head down and stayed out of trouble as much as he could so that he could focus on the important things. And Dustin isn't doing that here. Hopefully it changes. Hopefully Dustin's helpful. But right now, he has not been one bit of help. So we jump back to the radio station at this point. The power is back on, and Joyce is just attempting to make contact over and over and over and over. And Robin, she's just sitting there, like, got a pencil in her mouth, just kind of like, almost daydreaming, just thinking. And she looks over and she notices Will, like, just sitting there. And you could see it on Will's face. Like, he's upset that he's not doing more. He's upset that his mother's not doing more. He's upset that she's not taking into account what he knows and what he can do and how he can help. And you could see the look on his face. Joyce is like not even paying attention to this because she's just doing what she was told to do. Make a connection, reconnect over and over again, just calling out without any results. And this is when Robin is like, you know what? I got to do something.
Great Scott. How long has that light been red?
Oh, I don't know.
Shit. The flux capacitor is down again.
Is that bad?
I mean, it could be. It's fixable, but it's a two-man job.
She jumps up and grabs Will by the arm.
We'll be right back.
And runs upstairs with him.
Flux capacitor?
Right, I was lying. Obviously, that stupid light is always right. Everything is totally fine, except...
What?
Except for your mom's plan. I mean, no offense to your mom, but come on. The boys have already circled Zone G1 like 5 times already, and even if they miraculously find Hopper, where does that get us exactly? I mean, Holly is still missing. Whereas your plan is genius.
You think so?
Totally. You got an antenna in your head, goddammit, we may as well use it. The Enigma machine won. The war on knowledge is power. So
you wanna...
Skip school, play hooky, connect your brain into an interdimensional monster's radio signal, and save little Wheeler? Yeah, kind of. I mean, your mom is gonna be raging mad, and she's probably right. I mean, it is super dangerous, but...
Isn't everything we do super dangerous?
Precisely. So what do you say?
Screw it.
All right. Will wanted to help. Will had an idea. Will had a plan. Joyce did not, like, does not want him to be involved in any way. But he realizes that there's so much more he could be doing. And Robin agrees to the point where she's like, you know what? I'm going to defy this mother's wishes. And I'm going to take this boy, because she's only a couple years older than him, but he's still, you know, technically, what is he supposed to be, like 16, 15? And he's like, she's like, this is what you got to do. Like, you need to get out and you need to use your antenna to try to find Holly. And you could see the look on his face. He's like, screw it. Let's do this. He doesn't actually say that part, but I mean, you can definitely tell he feels it. He definitely feels it. And I love that Robin references Back to the Future. If you don't know, Great Scott, first of all, is what Doc Brown, that's his like saying, that's his one of his big quotes throughout the movie. Whenever it is like his exclamation, he's like, Great Scott. And the flux capacitor is, of course, what makes time travel possible. So we've talked about A Wrinkle in Time. We've talked about, you know, now Back to the Future has been referenced. It's just interesting, all these little time things that are being referenced here, you know? I don't know what it means, but I am noticing it. So we go back to the Upside Down, to the Upside Down lab, to be specific, where Dr. K is looking at the photographic proof that Eleven was indeed with Nancy Wheeler. And like when I watched this again, I was like, you know, I wonder if that would ever come back to bite Nancy, you know, in the butt, because she lied to law enforcement about being with this girl. I don't know if it's going to matter, but my first thought is, is Nancy going to get in trouble? And you know, Kate, she's not that, she sees it. She's like, okay, but we've had sightings before. And Ramirez is like, this time it's different. And of course I don't like that. Like, yes, I don't like any of these people, but again, Ramirez is trying to help. She's like, don't interrupt me until you have her in custody. Like, it's a little mean, Dr. K. But then Ramirez is finally like, oh, she's here. And he's like, what do you mean here? He means here in the Upside Down, dummy. In fact, we jump over to here. Well, there right now, because Eleven is still trudging along, you know, following the bloodstains, and Hopper is yelling for her over and over to slow down, but she's found more blood. And he's like, oh, you goddamn stubborn punk ass. And he stops and she's like, what's going on? He's like, you know, it's nothing. It's just a cramp, old age. But she lifts up the shirt and she sees the wound from that. Wasn't it the stray bullet that got him when he was in the back of the truck? And he's like, it looks worse than it is. But she immediately, you know, lies him down and starts cleaning the wound, which is something apparently she learned from Max. And she's like, stop moving. He's like, it stings. He goes, that means it's working. He goes, okay, you're more like me than I'd like to admit. And she goes, oh, what, a stubborn punk ass? He's like, oh, you heard that, huh? You talk loud, is what she said. And you could see they're like, you know, they're being a little frustrated with each other, but it's in a very loving way, the way they're talking to each other, even with this. And, you know, he talks about how he used to be a stubborn punk ass. And he reminisces about when he enlisted in the army, about how he always thought he was smarter than the officers. Sometimes he was, but mostly, no, he was just dumb. He was naive. And he talked about how he lost a lot of friends in the war, good men, brave men. And then that got him talking about his daughter and how brave she was. And it's just always gut-wrenching when we see that. And like how the doctors thought that she could actually win her fight. And you can see Hop, he breaks down momentarily. And you can, Eleven kind of figures out like, oh, you know, like you're afraid that you might lose me. And he says, I won't lose you. I won't. Like, so from here on out, you listen to me and do as I say. And she's like, so don't be a stubborn punk ass like you. He's like, yeah, don't be a stubborn punk ass. You can see he's making some face. Like, they're smiling. They're kind of making up any frustration that I think they had with each other. It has been diffused, at least. But then they hear this roar off in the distance. And, you know, he just said, just, you know, wait. And she gets up right away and just starts off. He's like, hey, he's yelling, I lead, as she heads right off and he follows her. Even though he's leading, he's following her along. Back at the hospital, this real douche of a doctor sits back and tries to just enjoy his cigarette. Again, his cigarette inside the hospital. Ah, the 80s. A nurse comes in and tells him, you know, like, the Wheeler kids really want to talk to you. They say it's an emergency. We cut to Nance and Mike talking to this doctor, telling him their sister's missing and they need to speak to their mother. And he is just very dismissive of them, like saying she's in recovery and her larynx is damaged, so she wouldn't even be able to talk anyway. Nancy tries to plead with the doctor, but the doctor makes his first of two big mistakes. First, he shushes Nancy, okay? And you can see that bugged her, bugged me too. Then, after he tells her, you know, she did very good getting her there and helping save her life, but let's not risk it now. Then his second mistake is walking away. He puts his hand on her shoulder, pats her shoulder and says, all right, sweetheart. And like, oh, like I said, right? Dr. Douchebag. Okay. He walks off and you can see Nancy is just fuming. And she sees a couple candy stripers go by. I'm pretty sure one of them was Vicky. Candy stripers is an old term for a teenage hospital volunteer, which I'm almost positive my mom was one of those in the 60s. A teenager and a hospital volunteer. And she sees those kids go by and she gets an idea. So she grabs Mike, pulls him into the elevator and hits the go down button. They go down to the janitorial level. So we go back to the van crew and Jonathan thinks he might have a signal. Like, he definitely hears something. Dustin comes in, being Dustin. He just takes the headphones off, puts them on, and he's like, he's almost like disappointed, but the way he does it, he's like, no, it's not a signal. It could be anything. But if it was Hop's telemetry tag, it would, you know, it would show here on their monitor, on their little signal. And then Joyce asks, like, could it possibly be the flux capacitor missing with the connection? The boys are like, I'm sorry, what? And she says, Robin mentioned that, you know, the flux capacitor was acting up and wondering if that could be the issue. And the boys all look at each other like, what the hell is going on? They don't say anything to Joyce right away. I don't know, because we cut away from them. But their first instinct is like, what? because they all know that Robin was obviously giving Joyce some BS so that Robin could go off with Will. And that's where she is right now. We cut over to Robin and Will, and they ride their bikes. They're right outside like this wooded area where Will had his visions. And Robin gives him a chance to turn back and go home. But it's funny. He's like, I'm actually more afraid of my mom at this point. So they go on in and they go to where he first had that first feeling in the woods, like where they by the picnic table, but nothing happens. Like he's like, I don't feel anything. So he keeps walking in deeper. And Robin's like, what are you doing? Where are you going?
If your theory's right, and my receiver is proximity-based, I need to get close to the demo to tap into the hive mind. And maybe earlier when the demo was passing by, it was headed for its monster lair.
Right. Monster lair. Well, we're already here. Might as well push our luck.
Okay, so my understanding there is that he thinks that since he had a connection here with the Demogorgon, maybe if he continues along this way, maybe this is where like the demo was passing by. Maybe it was headed for its lair. Like it seems like he's just walking right now, hoping that he can maybe get connected again, feel something again. And that's when Robin, like it's a quiet moment. They're walking along, and that's where Robin takes the moment to ask Will if maybe perhaps he was at the hospital yesterday. He's like, no, not me. She's like, oh, weird. I could have sworn I saw you there. But she talks about how she was there to see Vicky. She's her friend, or they're friends. You know, they're good friends. But she says, you know, some people might not understand our friendship. Basically, I'm just trying to say that if you were there and you did see something, it might just be better if, you know, it stayed between us. He's like, yeah, I didn't see anything. But you could see the look on his face, like he knows what he saw. And again, he's probably like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I'm not alone in this. Maybe I'm not some weirdo, you know, like maybe I am just a person and there's other people like me out there. Yeah, no kidding, Will. I wish you already knew this about yourself, bro. Okay. I do love that Will and Robin are having this connection, these moments, like just the two of them, because out of all of them, they share something that no one else, like an experience that no one else can compare, like that no one else goes through, that no one else can really relate to except each other. But I'm not even sure if Robin knows that yet. And I think Will is trying to come to terms with that. Like it's, I don't know exactly who knows what about everybody right now. It seems like at least Will had no idea about Robin until he saw what he saw. But so that makes me think Robin, she's right now maybe just trying to cover her tracks, but also at the same time, maybe she has her like suspicions about Will. I don't know, but I do love their relationship. And I do love that Robin seems to be there for Will, or want to be there for Will if Will needs it. And I just think that's great. So, you know, Will says, I didn't see anything. And then they're walking on a little more. And Robin gets distracted when she sees a mandala, which is like this rock, cool looking spiral of rocks. She's like, oh, did you make one of these, you know, in grammar school, or whatever it was. And the look of the rocks, like the spinning of the rocks, made Will think of the spinning of the flashback from earlier. And then all of a sudden he's like, laughter. I heard laughter, kids laughing, playing. Like something about this laughing and this playing makes him think of something. Like he takes off into the woods like he knows exactly where he's going. So we go back to the Upside Down with Hop and Eleven. They're making their way towards that roar they heard earlier where they assume it's the Demogorgon. They assume maybe that can lead them to Holly. But what they see is not the Demogorgon. It's not like anything they've ever seen before.
Jesus Christ.
What is it?
What the hell is that? It's like this giant wall of grossness. Like, it almost looks like a living organism, and it is humongous. And it just stands there right in their way. And then Eleven looks over and she finds Holly's shoe on the ground.
Holly was here. Right here. Maybe that's why I can't find her in my mind. It took her. Through the wall.
And then we back away. We back out from the wall, and we see just how massive it is. Elle and Hopper, they look like tiny little ants. Like, we back away, and we never see the top of this wall, right? It seems to fill the entire, like, view landscape from left to right, and it goes up high, and it's like as high as the camera, like the frame of your TV. It reminded me of the big ice wall in Game of Thrones, but like, at least at that point, at some point, you see a top of that. I don't see a top to this at all. So maybe that's where Vecna is hiding. Maybe that's where the Demogorgon's hiding. And maybe that's where Holly is. Because right now, they have no idea where she is. And they can't sense her. She can't sense her. And this giant wall doesn't seem to be any cracks. Doesn't seem to be any, like, ways to get through. This giant wall is in their friggin' way. We jump back to the hospital, and Mike and Nancy come out of the elevator. Nancy's dressed as one of the candy stripers, and Mike is just in a hospital gown. They walk by that very douchey doctor, and the one they talked to earlier. He's speaking to a nurse, so he doesn't even notice them. He probably doesn't pay attention or notice the candy stripers ever, unless he needs to talk down to them in some lecherous way. But Nancy, you know, is like, keep your head down, and telling Mike to limp. And like, he's doing this weird limp. She's like, just limp normal. He's like, this is what I'm doing. It's a regular limp. What's wrong? And all of a sudden they stop quickly and they realize they're outside their mom's room. And you could see like their look, like just dread that of what they're going to see. And they go in and they sit down next to Karen, and Nancy grabs her mom's hand and like, she's like, Mom, can you hear us? You can see Karen's eyes move a little. You can see her, like, a tear go down her eye. So she's aware. She's awake. Like, she's probably in a ton of pain. But she seems to be, like, responsive. And she opens her eyes and she turns and she sees Nancy. And you can see they almost share a smile. And Karen, like, she's, like, trying to smile. And Nancy's, it's like a smile of love, a smile of relief. And Karen tries to talk. But they tell her, no, Ma, you still need to heal, okay? But can you write? And Karen nods. So Nancy grabs a piece of paper and a pen, and the first thing she writes down is Holly. And, you know, Nancy's like, Ma, that's why we're here. Like, she's missing. And you can immediately see Karen, like, going into distress. You can hear the monitors start to beep, and like, her heart rate or her blood pressure is like totally spiking at this moment.
We're gonna get her back. We just need your help. We think there's someone that knows where Holly is, who knows why she was taken and where she is. We just don't know where he is. And so we're hoping that you might.
Karen hears all this and like just looks at them, and she takes the pen and she starts writing her next question, her next thought.
Who? We don't know his name, but Holly, she calls him Mr. Watson.
You could see at the mention of that name, Karen was like, wait, what? It's at this point we've kind of reached the grand finale moment of the episode, as we're jumping back between Robin and Will in the woods, and Karen, Mike, and Nancy in the hospital. And Robin and Will, they're running through the woods until they come to the elementary school. Robin's like, why are we here? And Will says, we're looking for this. And there's that merry-go-round spinny thing from the playground that Holly was on in the previous episode, and he spins it like he's on Wheel of Fortune. Jumping back to the hospital, Karen writes down that, you know, the teacher saw Holly talking to What's It, but that there was nobody there. Go back to the woods, and Will starts saying, you know, in my vision earlier, the sky was spinning, so I think I was actually here, right here on this merry-go-round during Mrs. Harris's recess. This is the clip that I played to open up this episode. You know, we see Derek, that little kid, grabbing the merry-go-round and bugging Holly and spinning it. And again, we see Will keeling over in the woods, that what happened earlier when he was with his friends. Robin's like, I don't understand. I thought you were seeing through the Demogorgon. He's like, this is where he figures it out. I think I was, but you said yourself, or I thought I was, but Vecna controls the hive mind, which means he's part of it too. So when he's searching for his victims, Robin's like, he invades their minds, and he's thinking he sees what they see. So I think he's saying he tapped in through the hive mind, through Vecna, through Holly. So because Vecna was using the hive mind to see what Holly was seeing, because he's infected her brain, he can actually see what she's seeing. Will is in that as well, and he kind of hacked his way in, basically. That's pretty rad. Back at the hospital, they're asking Karen more about Mr. What's It. You know, Nancy says, did you ever describe what he looked like, what he's wearing, anything? And it's at this point we hear a very familiar voice.
Holly, time for breakfast.
Oh, snap. I think that's pretty much, well, I might have said something worse when my niece and I were watching this. So we're actually seeing what happened with Holly as Karen is giving the answers to Mike and Nancy. You know, Holly, he says, Holly, time for breakfast. And Holly gets up off of the merry-go-round, all smiles, and she takes the hand of this man with a pocket watch. This is what Karen's describing. He has a pocket watch. He's tall. He wears a vest. He's gentle and kind. I don't know about that, Karen. At least not who, if Mr. What's It is who I think it is, those aren't the words I would think of to describe this person. And so the clip that I played for you at the beginning, again, it ends back in the woods where Will's like, if I'm seeing through the eyes of Vecna's next victim, say that 5 times fast, Vecna's next victim, this victim he's stalking, which means that I was seeing through, and Robin's like, you're seeing through Holly's eyes. But if that's true, it means, and Will finishes the thought, that I was him. I was Vecna. Like he was, the way he says that, it almost like he's Vecna, but no, the way he's really like, he's actually saying is like, my visions were that of Vecna. So they look over at this point and they see a school bus coming. And my first thought was like, oh, is this a vision? But no, they've just been up and out all night, that the morning bus is there to bring these kids to school the next day. It is at this point that we get the big reveal.
Did Holly ever say if he has a first name?
Karen starts writing, and we know what the name is the moment we see that first H.
Are the others here yet?
No, not yet.
You will save them too, won't you? Save them from the monsters?
Yes, Holly. Don't you worry. I'm going to save your friends. Every last one of them.
We see Holly walking with this man as Karen continues to spell out H.
And my family?
E.
Are they coming too?
N. R. Y.
Your friends first. And after, I'll save your family too, of course.
It's Henry.
I have room for everyone here.
It's Henry Creel. And he's brought Holly to the Creel House.
Bum, 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 bum
Mr. Sandman, bring me a treat. Bum, 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 bum. What an incredible reveal at the end. So that last moment, you had Karen writing out H-E-N-R-Y. You see Nancy and Mike like seeing the name Henry and being like, oh my goodness. At the same time, you're seeing Holly was taken from her school, at least according to Holly, the way it seemed to her. She must have no memory of what actually happened with the Demogorgon, because what we're seeing now is she's, you know, thinks she's getting up for breakfast. She's at the playground, and Mr. Watts, her friend, has brought him back to his house, which is the old Creel house, but it's perfectly restored. So this isn't reality, obviously, because Vecna does not look like this young Henry Creel character. Like, he looks like the orderly, the adult version of Henry Creel. He's dressed, he's decked out head to toe. He does dress pretty sharp. I will give him that. But he's brought Holly here for some reason, and it seems like he's going to bring all her friends there, because while he's saying that, you see Will seeing these other kids from Holly's class getting off the bus and walking to school, and he gets the goosebumps on the back of his neck. Like, all this is going on at once. Nancy and Mike figuring out, realizing that Mr. What's It is Henry. Karen's probably like, well, what's the problem? His first name's Henry. Because they don't fill her in on things yet. We'll see. Then you have, what was I saying? Oh, Will getting that sensation from being with, like, looking at those kids. I think he looked at one kid, it looked like, and was just like, what the hell? Like, all these kids went by, and then it looked like Derek. His goosebumps went up, like, ooh, baby. And we see Holly, wherever she is, actually, she thinks she is in this world right now, in this wonderful house that looks great. It doesn't look like there's been any, like you can even see the playground across the street. Like, it, everything looks pristine. Bop, 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 bop. And even that choice of song, Mr. Sandman, like, he has, like, brought her, he has her in some sort of dream state. Life is but a dream. Like, what she's seeing here is not real. But also, Mr. Sandman was playing in Back to the Future. Again, I don't know if that's me making the connection with the flux capacitor, the Wrinkle in Time book, and now this. I don't know if I'm connecting too much or making something out of nothing, but isn't that what podcasts are for sometimes? To like think, wait a second, am I onto something? I don't know yet. But I do know that Holly is, well, she seems to be someplace safe, but we all know that is a load of crap. So where are we now with all of our friends? We have Hopper and Eleven. They're in the Upside Down, and they just discovered that giant, like, wall of goo. We have Joyce, who was left alone, thinking she's waiting to hear about the flux capacitor. Robin and Will, they're off at the school. Mike and Nancy, they are in the hospital. Steve, Jonathan, and Dustin are still driving around. Lucas, I guess he's still with Max right now. He's at the hospital with Max, I think. I'm trying to think, the last time we saw him, it might have been with Max, I think. Did I cover everyone? We didn't see Murray at all in this episode. I think I covered most of our friends, right? Yeah. So that was the end of episode 2, the end of chapter 2, The Vanishing of Holly Wheeler. Another spectacular episode. And if you remember, this was the episode that we stopped that first night. So Wednesday night, we watched the first episode, The Crawl, and we watched this episode. I hit record right before we watched the first episode, my niece and me, and, or is it my niece and I? You know what I mean. And I hit record again the very moment we finished watching this episode.
Okay, quick update, Stranger Friends. My niece and I, Emma, we just finished chapter 2. The vanishing, wait a minute, what was it called? The Vanishing of Holly Wheeler, right? Yeah. And I think we're going to save 3 and 4 for tomorrow night. So we're both not going to look at a damn thing online.
Nope, no TikTok tomorrow.
But that was pretty great.
Oh my gosh, it was so good.
I think, Em, you called it right away when you saw the spinning that you saw that he's
seeing through Holly's eyes.
Holly's eyes. And I thought when I first saw that hand, are we actually seeing Henry? And oh, baby, we were. I never read A Wrinkle in Time, so for a moment I thought maybe it was Will from the future, but instead, no.
Because the Back to the Future references, too.
Right, oh my goodness, the flux capacitor.
Maybe he, took her in, the past or something, because, the whole house was still.
Right, the house is there, yeah.
And it looked, all new.
Or is he, in reality, is he behind that, is that all in that bubble, in that giant wall?
If you go in
there, it's the past. Ooh, so many thoughts.
Because we know that. We know the Upside Down is a few years, or it stopped pausing
right,
time on November 6th.
Yes, it did. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I think we're going to save the next two, though, for tomorrow night, and then we'll have to reconvene then and just try to, I guess, ignore anything. Don't look at anything. You promise?
I'm not going to look at it. Okay. I don't think I'm going to open TikTok at all. I'll just watch my Instagram reels.
No, I can't, because you know those the algorithm knows we like Stranger Things. It exactly. knows it's coming
it's
for
listening.
Us.
It's listening.
It's listening. It's like Vecna. It knows. And it has an antenna, and it can see our thoughts. So excellent start so far. We're halfway through it, and then we watch the next two, and then we have to wait a friggin' month.
Oh,
my gosh. Until then, stay stranger.
Stay stranger.
Look at that. Without even seeing anything else, just watching those two, the first thing we thought of was some sort of weird time travel thing. Is this bubble in, I forgot I even thought, is this world inside that wall? Is it a wall or is it a cave? I don't know what it was. But I love that my niece and I were both we need to stay off. I think I told her, you got to stay off Instagram, dude. I don't trust anything. I don't want to get spoiled on anything. In fact, I saw the other day there was a trailer for part two. I'm like, I don't want to watch it. I don't want to see it. I like going back and seeing all the behind the scenes stuff after the fact, but I don't want to see anything more. I've seen enough. I am ready for Christmas Day, but of course, we still have 2 weeks until we get there. And in that time, we still have two more episodes of Stranger Danger 5 covering the two other episodes of Stranger Things 5. And I cannot wait to talk about them. But until I do, I want to give a quick shout out to a company who sent me something really special. I got an email from someone at Lucy Koss. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Lucy Koss, which is a design studio based out of Denmark. On their About Us page, it says, founded in 2012, Lucy Koss is a Danish design studio that brings together traditional craftsmanship with modern design sensibility. Known for its nostalgic and thoughtful pieces, Lucy Koss collaborates with artists, designers, and global brands to create unique products that transcend trends. And guess what? They sent me something. I got this box in the mail, and it says, "Hi, Mike. We hope you're just as excited about the new season as we are. We hope you'll be happy with this piece. Best regards, Lucy Koss." And they sent me this wooden figurine in this beautiful Stranger Things box. This wooden figurine. I didn't know what it was. It didn't say which character it was. It's a character from Stranger Things. I opened it up, and it is the man, the myth himself. Some may call him Henry. Some may call him One. Some may call him a son of a bee. I'm talking about Vecna. I got this awesome Vecna, this like cool figurine that it came in a little bag. It's so cool. I put a video together and I'm going to put it on my TikTok. Hopefully have that up today as well. So find that at Geek Mentality Mike on TikTok, but I'm going to post it on all my socials. You can find me everywhere at Geek Mentality. So once that video is up, I'm going to post it on every single social platform that I have. And you can also find it. I'll also post it on the show's social platform, which is Stranger D Pod on Twitter and StrangerDangerPodcast.com on Blue Sky. So I definitely thank you guys so much for this. And I'm definitely going to be sharing that really soon. And hopefully I can, you know, talk about them more in the future as well, because this is like the stuff they make is really cool. And I'm thinking like this might not be my last Stranger Things piece. That's for sure, because there are some really cool things on their website. So a big shout out to them. A big shout out to everyone who sent comments, everyone who reached out, everyone who listened. We are now 2 weeks away. Well, 2 weeks and like 3 days away from Stranger Things 5-2. And we have 2 weeks left to talk more about Stranger Things 5 Part 1. So again, look for another episode coming next Monday, and then part 4, the finale, the big end of part 1 coming on the 22nd, just in time for Christmas. And also what's great about that day is on the 22nd starts my 2-week vacation from work, which means I don't have to work and my work is closed. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to come back to all these emails. Nope. My work is completely closed. So there'll be pretty much nothing that I'm going to be missing out for 2 weeks. And what will I be doing on those 2 weeks off? I will be focusing on, I guess, spending time with my wife and my dog, but I'll really be focusing on you guys, the Stranger Friends, and getting those next episodes out, because it all comes to an end on December 31st. The year comes to an end. Stranger Things 5 comes to an end. Stranger Things comes to an end. Stranger Danger? Not so much. But Stranger Danger 5 ends shortly after that. And it's just been a long road to get here. And it's just, what I do like is that it's not, they didn't put the whole season out at once, because it would feel like we're done already. And now I'm just recapping like, oh, this was great, but remember this. Now let's go back and talk about it. No, I love that they did it this way, so that it gives us some time to really kind of jump in to what we've seen so far, get us ready for the next batch. And then we do it all again. We get 3 episodes, and then that gives us a few days to get to the big finale. I saw one of my neighbors actually posted about going to the movie theater on the 31st. I'm jealous of her. I wonder if she'll be going with her kid. I think I saw like on Facebook they went to see the play in New York, and I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So I wonder if she just posted about it or if she's actually going. But she's been posting a lot of like sharing reels of Stranger Things, and I don't have like it in me to say, hey, you should check out my podcast. But you know, if it happens someday, it happens. Hi, if you're listening. But what was I saying? Oh, I don't see myself going to the movie theater. I see myself sitting on the couch. I'm pointing at the couch. You have no idea why would I be pointing at the couch, but it's right over there. And that's what I'll be doing. And I think I'll have my headphones wired into my head, because I don't want to be bothered by anybody. I just want to see this show. Then I'll go, wake up, honey. Happy New Year. Give you the New Year's kiss. We both fall back asleep. And then I wake up and I watch it again. And then watch it again. And then talk about it. And then record it. And then share it with you. It's like we've been waiting years for this. And it's finally here. And I'm loving it. And I hope you're enjoying the show. I hope you're enjoying the show. I will be back next Monday. But again, until then, thank you guys so much. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for liking. Thank you for just checking out everything. I will see you in a week. But until then, 1, 2, 3, kill Vecna!
as non-experts.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.